Welcome, everyone. This is our webinar on TeachBack, Improving Patient Safety and Engagement. My name is Jennifer Geisert, and I am a Quality Improvement Advisor at Great Plains Quality Innovation Network. I'm also a regional lead for the Cardiac Improvement Task. Great Plains QIN is a Quality Innovation Network Quality Improvement Organization for Kansas, Nebraska, North Dakota, and South Dakota. We aim to achieve better health care, improved health, safer care, and lower health care costs. I'd like to welcome and thank our audience for their participation today. We are fortunate to have representation from partners, community members, stakeholders from our four-state region, as well as we have registrants from Missouri, Iowa, Minnesota, Michigan, New Hampshire, and Kentucky, as well as Texas. Today's webinar will be recorded and posted to our website, www.greatplainsquin.org, at a later date. It generally takes 7 to 10 business days for that to be posted to our website, but you'll be able to access the recording at that time. There will be opportunity for questions after today's presentation, or you can post any questions via the chat function at the bottom right side of the screen. We will be monitoring that chat feature throughout today's WebEx. I also want to let you know that if you want to change your viewing, you just need to hover to the right of the screen, and you'll see three options. The one on the left is video strip view. The one in the middle is a side-by-side view, and that's probably the most likely what you'll want to view, but there's another choice, which is a floating panel view. You can click on those to change it to your viewing pleasure. On the screen here, you see some pictures of the people on our GP QIN staff, myself, and then Kathleen Panis. She'll be monitoring chat for us today. And then our two speakers, Sally May and Lisa Thorpe. I'll be introducing them in just a bit. I want to take this time now to talk a little bit about our GP QIN work as far as it relates to the cardiac health and reducing disparities. Heart disease, stroke, and other cardiovascular diseases kill over 800,000 Americans each year, accounting for one of every three deaths. It's the nation's number one killer among both men and women, and the leading cause of health disparities across populations. To address this issue, the GP QIN, along with other national programs like Million Hearts and Target BP, are working to reach and exceed aggressive goals that will improve cardiovascular health and care for all Americans. Specifically, the GP QIN, along with these partners, are working with home health and physician offices, as well as patients and families and stakeholders. We're offering resources and assistance on preventing cardiovascular disease by utilizing best practices to achieve better results in the ABCS measures. We also facilitate home health agencies to participate in the National Home Health Cardiovascular Data Registry. We assist physician clinics with the quality payment program, and also we extend invitations to participate in our learning and action networks. Empowering individuals to make healthier choices is one of our goals. We offer a multitude of resources for improving cardiac care on our website. These resources and educational opportunities are all free and available by joining our Learning in Action Network. You can do that on our website. All improvers are welcome, and the LAN is a wonderful opportunity to stay up to date and connected. As I said, we had a lot of states that registered outside of our region. We had a total of 284 people registered for today's event. That tells me that this topic is very popular, and I can't think of a single intervention that you can do that has a greater impact on personal health than to practice TeachBack. Let's look at some reminders here. You can go to the next slide, please. Again, I mentioned that we have the chat function available. And again, the recordings and slides are available on our website. The slides are there now. Recording will be available in 7 to 10 days. And that's our website link. Next slide, please. So let's frame the discussion today. Our objectives are on the slide there. We want to define teach-back and the role in improving patient safety and engagement. We'll look at what teach-back is and why we want to use teach-back. Then secondly, practice the use of plain language. And we'll review the 10 key elements of teach-back and also evaluate the use of teach-back using teach-back observation tool. Next slide, please. So there is CE available for nurses, one contact hour, for those that are attending today's live event. At the end, you will be redirected for an evaluation as we close the seminar. The certificate will probably be between 5 days and 7 days for individuals completing that evaluation. Also, an email will be given out with a link that will be needed for anybody that is sitting around a single phone line today. So if you have multiple attendees, please look out for that email that will give you instructions on how people can get their certificate for CE. I just want to go through and give our bio on our speakers today. First, we have Sally May, and Sally is a registered nurse. She's a senior quality improvement specialist at Quality Health Associates at North Dakota. She graduated Trinity School of Nursing in Minot, North Dakota. She received a Bachelor of Science in Nursing degree from South Dakota State University in Brookings, South Dakota. She has a Certificate of Guided Care Nursing from the Institute of Johns Hopkins Nursing in Baltimore, Maryland, and is certified in Respecting Choices First Steps, Advanced Care Planning Facilitator and Instructor. Sally currently co-leads the Great Plains Quality Innovation Network Care Coordination and Home Health Infection Prevention Special Innovation Project for our region. And she is the project coordinator for Honoring Choices North Dakota, a grassroots organization that has the vision that the healthcare choices a person makes becomes the healthcare a person receives. And our second presenter is Lisa Thorpe. She's a graduate of Minot State University in Minot, North Dakota, where she received her Bachelor of Arts in Business Administration and Bachelor of Science in Nursing. Lisa has over 20 years of nursing experience. Lisa worked for a critical access hospital for 7 years and was cross-trained to acute care, ICU, OB, and ER. She was a clinical nurse for years and was clinical nurse for Family Practice Clinic of 10 primary care providers, going on to become a clinical nurse supervisor and diabetes educator. Lisa joined the Great Plains Quinn in April of 2017 as a quality improvement specialist. We want to thank Sally and Lisa for taking the time today and sharing their knowledge and experience with us. I will now turn the presentation over to Sally.
Thank you, Jennifer. We're hoping that for today's presentation is not just something that you sit and listen to, but that is something that you respond and are able to implement. In fact, we're hoping that this is somewhat of a teach-back training for you, so it is quite interactive, and throughout our presentation today, you will be asked to enter various responses into chat. And basically, just give you a flavor of what teach-back training can be like. So getting started, so that we have a standard definition of teach-back, there's also different terms that are used. I've heard the show-me communication method. I've heard living room language is also another term that's incorporated with teach-back. But it's an evidence-based communication method to really confirm whether our patient or in some cases the caregiver or the family member that's sitting in the clinic with your patient, that they understand the information that we are explaining to him or her. It's endorsed by as an evidence-based teaching technique by the Joint Commission, the National Quality Forum, and also the American Medical Association, which might be a useful detail for you as you talk to your healthcare providers. The use of teach-back has demonstrated improved patient engagement. It's also improved patient safety. Obviously, if they're understanding the instructions we're giving them and what dose of Coumadin they take on which day, obviously it will improve the safety of the patients, and hopefully one less trip to the ED for because of their misuse of their Coumadin. Practically speaking, TeachBack is asking patients, or again, their family member or caregiver, to explain back to you in their own words what they need to know, or in other words, what it was that you just taught them. TeachBack confirms how clearly you provided the information. It is not a test of the patient. I think one of the best explanations of TeachBack I have seen is the response that a nursing student put on her evaluation from a training that we provided last fall for a nursing program. On the evaluation form, the student wrote, preparing an explanation, using plain language before the interview, and asking open-ended questions, ensuring that TeachBack is encouraging and comfortable for the patient. You know, I'd be really interested in knowing who has incorporated TeachBack into your clinic or your area of practice at this point in time. So if you would enter that into chat, and we'll just see how well TeachBack is spread across this region and across a number of other states the way it sounds. Before we discuss TeachBack, I wanted to take a couple minutes to reflect on the goals of patient education. We would all agree that, yes, we want to increase the patient's ability and knowledge and skills, whether we're talking about diabetes, as Lisa is as a diabetic educator, or what dose of that anticoagulant that they're supposed to be taking on which day. But to be honest, until I was providing education in a patient's home as a home care nurse, I was basically satisfied with simply improving my heart failure patient's knowledge of his medications and his consistency with weighing them him or herself. I didn't really think about the long-range goals that we see displayed here on the slide. I did not consider that my patient's non-compliance may have something to do with how I was providing patient education. But the truth is, without effective patient education, we are not going to achieve even one of these goals. About a year ago, I was referred to an ophthalmologist for a condition I have in my right eye. After the scans and those lovely dilating eye drops and his physical exam and the review of my medical record, he begins a very detailed description of the pathophysiology in my right eye. About 20 seconds into his explanation, I'm thinking to myself, does he realize how long it's been since I've had anatomy and physiology of the eye? And frankly, at 20 years old, I really wasn't too interested in how the eyes worked. I just knew I had to wear glasses. But I thought to myself, okay, so I'm not really tracking what he's saying, but I know where to go for the information. You know, my ophthalmologist thought he was paying me a compliment when he said, at the conclusion of his explanation, "You're a nurse. You don't have any questions." Yes, he did provide a very detailed and thorough description of what was going on in my eye. But as far as any questions, he basically shut the door on me. But you know, I'm not alone in that experience. One out of six literate Americans are proficient in understanding health information. Up to 80% of patients forget what they're told at the clinic. You know, and that's really, when you start thinking about all the interactions that are happening within your clinic and the number of patients you're seeing on a daily basis, you know, there's only 2 out of 10 that walk away remembering what it is that you told them. And just think how important that is. You know, the reasons are multifaceted. Patients generally have a non-existent level of health literacy, or at the most, it's very limited. And you know, and education has nothing to do with this. And one of my hospice patients was an orthopedic surgeon. And I could tell when we were, as we were talking about end-of-life care and some of the interventions we could put into place, he just kind of looked at me like, I'm not grasping what you're really saying here. And then he was rather argumentative. So finally I just asked him about his knowledge of end-of-life care, and he looked at me without responding and said, "I get the point, Sally." So what I learned in that exchange is that my ability to provide credible patient education wasn't dependent necessarily on someone's education, because an orthopedic surgeon, we all know, is highly educated. If a patient or caregiver are apprehensive about a pending diagnosis, I mean, maybe they just heard that they have heart failure. To most individuals, that means their heart is going to stop in the next beat. They don't understand what heart failure necessarily means. But thinking that their heart may stop, they're going to be nervous about that. And so their ability to take in information about heart failure is going to be quite limited. I think about some of the patients that I've seen, just their ability to get, particularly in a rural area, they've ridden in a car or maybe a pickup truck for an hour to get there. And then they get from the parking lot into your office. And then from the waiting room back to the exam room. All of those they're exerting a considerable amount of physical exertion. And for some of those individuals and the patients that you see, that's a very taxing effort. And really, they're just too tired to receive any sort of information that you're telling them about their congestive heart failure or about their chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. They just can't receive it. All they're thinking about, I am so tired, I can't wait to get home. And then our use of medical terminology. We provided training at one health system here in North Dakota, and it was for the department managers. And one of the managers, about halfway through the training, said, she raised her hand and she goes, "Do you know, Sally, it took me 4 years to learn medical vocabulary, and now you're telling me I need to use plain language?" That's exactly right. And how difficult it is for us to think in a different way. But we have to, because it's the language that our patients use. You know, and some of the issues are ours that we've created. We have limited time to have conversations with patients. And I've heard from individuals too, and even my own experience, what are we looking at when we have someone sitting in the exam room? A large share of that time in the exam room is spent looking at the computer and either entering or reading what the medical record says. And sometimes we provide just way too much information. And so that 80%, they're basically telling themselves, I'll never remember this anyway, so they basically turn off from the conversation that we think is very important for them. But probably the important thing is that we overestimate how much our patients are actually understanding. You know, TeachBack has benefits not only for patients, it has benefits for us as well. Time that we spend providing patient education to patients that they're not understanding is basically we're wasting our time. Preventing misunderstanding of the treatment plan and medication regimen because we're using TeachBack and using language that our patients understand, you know what? Maybe we're going to prevent one trip to the ED, one call to EMS for an issue, and then minimizes the number of phone calls asking you, when was I supposed to take that Coumadin and what size was the dose? I don't remember. You know, those kind of things. So the more effective that our teaching is when they're in the clinic, the more efficient the work that we do will become. Something worth remembering. I love Mr. Shah. I've never met him, which is obviously by the dates of his lifetime. But he's right on. He had nothing to do with healthcare, but he definitely was spot on when it comes to communication. The major problem with communication is our assumption that it actually took place. On the graphic is a diagram of the teach back process. I'm going to stop just a minute. Kat, how are individuals incorporating teach back in their place of practice? What are you seeing in chat?
We have quite a few that are using teach back. Some of them are using it to train that work with their staff. Others are using it with their patients. We have a wide range. Some use it to teach medical injections. Others to work on their discharge or to work with new admissions to the hospital. Elizabeth Richardson, in their practice, their diabetic educator uses teach back.
Awesome. I think the way it sounds, I think we have some individuals out there that who could be giving this presentation as well, if not better than I am. So that's great. That's awesome. What we see here is really a diagram of the teach back process. And so we're just going to spend, but before we get into teach back itself, I want to spend some time really talking about the importance of using plain language. It makes it easier for everyone to understand and to use health information. You know, and although it's a familiar idea, in fact, I just heard just recently that there was a nurse practitioner saying, you know what, we heard that I learned how to use teach back like 10 years ago, but nobody ever uses it when in the practice where she was at. So we're not, it's been around for a while, obviously. You know, I like to compare teach back to thinking about how I respond to when I take the car into the mechanic because I have a check engine light. And they're going into this explanation of why that light came on. And I'm thinking, you know what? Well, that's good to know, but just fix it because I'm not understanding what you're telling me. Or when you, how comfortable are you explaining what's wrong with your laptop if you're contacting your IT support? You know, I understand English, but the vocabulary used by mechanics and the IT support staff, not so much. So plain language is grammatically correct, but it's using a vocabulary that is known to the reader or the listener. It's not dumbing or talking down to individuals, but it's using a vocabulary that they can understand. So we are going to take a few minutes to practice the use of plain language. Martha's husband has heart failure, but her friend has told her that because her husband has heart failure, that he should not have any salt. So one day she's at your clinic and she asks you for information about salt. So you give her a couple of resources and the patient education brochure that your clinic has used. Well, the one that you use happens to say in its opening paragraph that the words salt and sodium are often used interchangeably, but they do not mean the same thing. Sodium is a mineral and one of the chemical elements found in salt. Salt is also known by its chemical name, sodium chloride. It's a crystal-like compound that is abundant in nature and is used to flavor and preserve food. Now, I don't know about you, or about your patients. But for my father, this brochure, just by this opening paragraph, would end up in his maybe someday reading stack. The vocabulary is rather complex and scientific, and for day-to-day purposes, it's not all that helpful nor inviting. So on this slide are several examples of medical terminology used in the FDA sodium brochure. And if you downloaded the resources, you should have this one. And there are several terms that we could think about. How could we use, what plain language could we use to describe those? And so I'd like you to just to enter into chat, you know, a couple examples of what would you use for essential nutrient or fluid balance? What does that mean to someone out on the street? Muscle contraction. Exceed, cardiovascular disease, and I love this one, 1,500 milligrams per day. Now, what is that? How much salt or sodium is that? And the percent of daily value, and then packaged foods. So answer that in chat, and we'll check back later and see what your ideas are. Comparing the two SALT resources that you received as handouts today, you will see how these two resources are used. One is in plainer language, and one is a little more technical, the FDA sodium handout that we're just talking about. And so you'll see how those can be used. Since we discussed the use of plain language, we'll turn to the teach-back process. Key principles of teach-back include chunking out the information, in other words, in small segments. Identify what that critical information is that patient or that family member needs to know at this point in time. An overview, you gave your patient a brief overview of what it means to have a hypertension using plain language. Now it's time to ask the patient or family member teach back to you, using their own words, what hypertension is. If he or she is able to correctly explain in his or her words the education you provided, continue with the next segment as appropriate. If the patient was not able to teach the information back correctly, reteach the information using different vocabulary, a plainer language, or maybe using some illustration that would help communicate the thoughts that you're trying to communicate. With patient education, sometimes less is more. Kat, are there any examples of plain language in chat?
We have a few.
Okay.
Misty Baker, instead of saying exceed, would use more than. Jane Stotts, instead of packaged foods, anything that doesn't come from nature that way, that's a good one.
Okay.
Elizabeth Richardson, I really like her rewording of essential nutrients, important parts of the food you eat. I like that one. She also would reword cardiovascular disease for the health of your heart and your veins.
Awesome. Thank you, Kat.
Yep.
So let's take a look at a resource that's been developed by Always Use Teachback, and you see the link on this slide. They've actually developed the 10 elements or essential elements of Teachback. And so today we're going to talk a little bit about these, and then you will observe Teachback being actually demonstrated. I couldn't think of the word. Thank you, Lisa. And then looking for those elements. So first is really, understanding that effective teachback is our responsibility, including ensuring that that experience is comfortable for the patient. So having a caring tone of voice sitting down and looking at an eye level with a patient or family member. So it's like that you're investing yourself in that conversation. Backing out of the exam room does not exactly give the message to your patient that you have time for explanations or his or her questions. Present the information as your patient's equal, making, like we talked about, the eye contact, and if all possible, sitting. Use plain language, asking open-ended questions, not what we so often hear, do you have any questions, or as my ophthalmologist did, told me I didn't have any questions. So on the slide, you see an example of how to introduce a question. The doctor has changed how much medication you should take, and that can be confusing. What that question does in asking that way, you're conveying to your patient that you understand, all these changes can be really confusing. That gives them a level of comfort that, you understand where they're at. And it helps them to really then start identifying what some of their questions they may have for you. Ask the patient to explain the information in their own words. Tell me what you'll do when you get home. About your heart failure or your blood pressure, whatever the issue might be. Ask the patient what they will tell their spouse when they get home, or their daughter when she picks them up from the clinic, or what they will do when they get home. Those are such good ways of, rather than saying, Lisa, do you have any questions, you're opening the door to them to explain, because it would be illogical. What are they going to tell their wife? It's more conversational. And what's good about that, too, is that addresses not only their ability to recall what you've taught them, but how they can apply that information. Use non-shaming questions. Because you have several new pills, what will you do if you forget to take one of them or one morning? This conveys understanding that a medication change can be confusing. A question framed in this manner is developing your patient's problem-solving skills and really, ultimately, the chronic disease management. If you wonder about a specific skill, obviously, ask for a demonstration of that skill. And of course, that's not new, and we do that regularly. But emphasize that the responsibility is yours to clearly explain something. Saying something along the lines of, you've had a busy appointment today, and I want to make sure that my explanation of your medication changes is clear. What are some signs you need to watch for due to the changes in your medication? This engages the patient and or their family member and conveys your understanding. It opens the door for your patient to receive instructions. The last couple of the essential elements relate to really the patient, the resources that we're using. Take a look at your patient education resources. Is plain language used? What size of font is used? What color is the ink? Is there open space or is it a crowded with resource with small font? Your patient education may be free, but if your patients are not understanding or utilizing it in the long term, it could be very costly. I encourage organizations to consider using the stoplight format as much as possible. Patients understand what this means. Home health agencies have been using these type of resources for years. If you have a home health agency in your community, give them a call and ask them about their stoplight patient education resources. The other point I make is that within a community, we need to give patients the same information. Not necessarily using the same resource, but using the same information. Patients are confused. Is it 3 pounds in 2 days or 5 pounds in 3 days when they need to call the doctor? And then, of course, documenting the use of patient resources. Demonstrating the use of TeachBack. Yes?
This is Kat. Before we moved on from these 10 essential elements, I had a question in chat.
Okay.
Amanda is asking if you could explain number 5, the non-shaming questions, a little more.
Okay. The non-shaming questions would be, number 1 is not to use questions as my ophthalmologist did. You don't have any questions. The other is to ask them outright, do you have any questions? Or one that I like to use, too, is in my home care experiences, well, I would ask, do you know how to use your inhaler? Well, I quickly learned that everybody knows how to use their inhaler or their nebulizer, but when you ask for that demonstration of it, not very many people actually did. So it's really looking at, you know, incorporating like that show me if we're talking about a skill, or going back and asking a question about, we used the example, when you go home, what will you tell your husband, or what will you tell your neighbor, or what do you, you know, what was important out of the conversation today that becomes more of a conversation than definitely avoiding, do you have any questions?
Or saying it in a negative way, you don't have any questions, do you?
That's a perfect example, Lisa, and I keep forgetting to mention that. You don't have any questions, do you? Right, basically we're telling them, no, you don't have any questions. And we really don't want to hear the questions that you have. So basically, here to demonstrate to us how to have a teach back exchange with a patient is Lisa, and she just happens to have a patient with her.
Mm-hmm.
Lisa, you may want to introduce your patient.
Thanks, Julie, for agreeing to sit in for us as our patient today with hypertension. So it's good to see you. I'm glad you came in for your checkup. So, you know, when you come into the doctor's office, we usually check your vitals, and one of those things that the nurse says is she'll check your blood pressure.
And yours today showed that you have what we call as hypertension, so that means you have high blood pressure. When you have high blood pressure, it means that your blood pressure is measured higher than we want it, and we watch it with two numbers. There's a top number and a bottom number. The top number should be less than 130, and the bottom number should be less than 80. Your top number was 148, and your bottom number was 86. And we've been measuring that for a while, and your last few visits show that your numbers are higher than recommended. So I want to give you this handout so it'll help you to remember it at home. And so we really don't want you to be any higher than this level right there. And so you can keep those numbers in mind so when you come back for your clinic appointments, that helps you to identify where we want you to be. Your blood pressure can be affected by something called sodium, which is found in a lot of foods that we eat. And another word for sodium is salt. Where have you heard that word before?
Salt?
Yeah.
Pouring salt, Morton salt, salt on your food.
Right. So we usually associate it with the food that we eat. Mm-hmm. And the problem is there's a lot of hidden foods in the salt that we eat. This handout shows some common foods that have a lot of salt in them. And one simple thing that you can do is to start eat more fresh foods and fewer of these prepared foods. Fresh foods are best. Your next choice would be frozen foods because they tend to have less salt than canned foods. Prepare your own food when you can and try to use foods that try not to use foods that are prepackaged like your mixes and sauce mixes. When you go shopping, you can also look for foods that say no added salt. When you do use canned foods like beans or tuna and vegetables, you can rinse them before you eat them, and that will get rid of some of that extra salt. So it's kind of a lot of information, and I want to make sure I explained it clearly. So what will you tell your family that you have to do to manage your sodium?
I think that I have it kind of clear, but could you explain a little bit more the difference between salt and sodium and what I'm going to have them help me look for on a label?
Great. So that's a great question. And since you asked that, I do have a handout that will help you remember that too. So you'll look for the sodium on your label, and then we want you to choose the foods that have a lower sodium content. A lower sodium content would be the 5% mm-hmm. of sodium, and the higher foods that we don't want you to choose are the 20%. So that would be something you can watch for. If you could practice that, and then the next time you come in, mm-hmm. you know, we could go over that and review that again.
Yep.
But like I said, to start with, you could just start eating fewer of these foods. Mm-hmm. And you can take these with you so you don't have to have all of that memorized.
Okay.
How about your blood pressure? What can you tell me about how we measure your blood pressure?
I think I understand the higher numbers are not good and a certain level, and you wrote that on a piece of paper here, if I can find it again. I'm not entirely sure of exactly what my target blood pressure would be.
We want you to have it less than 130 over 80, and I'll just write that here separately for you, so that's a very clear number for you to keep in mind when you,
okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for the information.
You're welcome.
So, Lisa, there were, you had two different, actually you had three handouts.
Yeah.
One of them that you used was just talked about blood pressure. So what was the difference between the two that you used regarding salt and sodium?
One just more clearly were clear pictures that showed which foods to avoid and you wouldn't have to do so much label reading.
Okay.
I think it depends on your audience. You might have some older folks that will look at the picture and say, oh, yes, I just need to avoid those. But for somebody like Julie who asked the question on, you know, should I look for sodium or salt, some people will be more capable of doing that than others. So you definitely have to gear it to your audience.
Going back to my father, he definitely would like that salty six because it has pictures on it, and he would like, oh, yeah, he can relate to that. Though I'm having been in his kitchen just as of yesterday, I think some of those foods are on his cabinet. So we'll have to do some work on that. So enter into chat. What were some of the examples of those 10 essential elements of TeachBack that you saw in Lisa and Julie's demonstration? And by the way, thank you, you two, for doing that. So let's talk about TeachBack. When do you use it? Really, I tell some folks that said, my land, there's really very few times that you wouldn't necessarily need to use TeachBack, but definitely at times when someone has a new diagnosis, there's a lot to learn. Yes, my ophthalmologist thought he was being helpful, but he wasn't. But fortunately, because of my background, I do know where to get credible information. Changes in medication or new medications, and how to use those. Again, when we talk about those, the nebulizers and the inhalers, it's appalling how misused they may be and how ineffective they can be when they are misused. What are the home care instructions? You know, what should they be doing at home? Recommended behavior changes. When we're talking about exercise, we have Julie here with her hypertension, and would exercise help her, and how much would it be? And looking at those and helping them to understand just exactly what does walking more mean for that particular individual, and what are the treatment options? And really thinking about the shared decision making. Are we laying out the various options in a way that that patient and their family can understand? The use of a new device. It could be as simple as a walker, and how to transfer to get in and out of a vehicle. Some of the just some of the day-to-day things that families and their loved ones are experiencing. And then what's the next step? What's the next thing that needs to occur within that their treatment plan? And really, any time that you're providing information could help improve a patient's health outcomes, TeachBack is definitely appropriate. Next slide. So I want to talk about some resources that are out there. One that is specifically designed for implementing TeachBack in the clinic is the Agency for Healthcare Research and Qualities, and it's their guide to improving patient safety in primary care setting by engaging patients and family. For the clinics, this is absolutely the go-to spot. They have an implementation guide, so it really helps you to walk through the process. How are we going to implement this? It has TeachBack tips that are cards that you can provide to your staff. There's a slide deck that's already regarding TeachBack that's already developed. There's role play scenarios. There's interactive modules online, and we'll talk a little bit more about how to use that. And you can see the link here on the slide. So just using their quick start guide, which is what you see on the screen right here, it kind of lays out a process to really start thinking, is how are we going to implement TeachBack? Review the intervention and training materials. What is out there? What are these tools and these resources saying so that you become familiar with them? Look at then consider the implementation decisions that you need to make. Where are you going to start? I mean, is it going to be all your staff? Is it going to be like the cardiology clinic? Is it going to be the nurses? Is it the providers? So thinking about the scope and where to start, who needs to be instructed, and then thinking about your workflow, primarily documentation. How are you capturing that? And then thinking about who is the champion, not necessarily the person who does all the training, but who has developed the expertise in using TeachBack. And then really walk the talk. They have experienced that it really works, and they're seeing success with TeachBack. They're familiar with success. They're really your champion and your the one that can promote TeachBack within your clinic. Then think about customizing the training. What are the type of patients that you're seeing? And how would the education be specific to them? And maybe that's even when you, what you want to think about, too, is maybe starting with your heart failure patients or your diabetics or a specific population or patient group. Then thinking about training team members. In collaboration with ARC and then with another quality improvement network, we really have come up and with some, I think it's a really efficient way of providing teach-back training. Number one, have them do complete the interactive module. And that's required pre-work. And it takes about 20 to 30 minutes to complete that. And then organize a teach-back clinic where you're practicing plain language and actually incorporating the staff in that about what plain language can we use and getting examples for others, and then having demonstrations and return demonstrations on their ability to provide the teach-back training to use that. And so you're looking at about, 90 minutes of time, in which about 30 to 45 minutes of that, it would be involved you and in that as well. So it's really an efficient way of providing that training. And then really going live, making TeachBack the standard of care, the way that you provide patient education. You know, interestingly, we've done considerable TeachBack training across North Dakota. A public health unit, we provided education to all their staff, including their CNAs. And at first I thought, oh, this is a little bit interesting. I'm not, I really wouldn't think that, that patient education would be within their scope of work. But when they started explaining to me that what they do a lot of safety training. I mean, yes, their licensed staff provide that overall, but the CNAs are constantly reinforcing that training. And they were just so enthusiastic about the training, because then they said, well, now we know how to ask the questions. So they really appreciate it. So there really isn't a limit to who can benefit from TeachBack training, as long as they're using it within their scope of work. So this is just a screenshot of what you can see with when you complete the ARCS online module for TeachBack. The date and time is documented. So when those individuals come to your TeachBack clinic, guess what? They can bring documentation that they completed their online training. Okay. Are there any responses related to TeachBack and some of the elements? Kat?
Yep. Yeah, there are. Jennifer identified using the common words, the alternative words for sodium and blood pressure. And also she liked the showing examples of the food labels and how to prepare food. Also identified asking those open-ended questions that didn't have a yes or no answer. Kathy Corbett had a good comment in about finding out how much they know about the topic. So you can, that's an opportunity to clarify any misinformation or just give them the information that they lack instead of going over everything. And then also Elaine noticed that in the demonstration they did use the word vitals, which we all slip up and use the terminology we're used to. And her suggestion was to explain to the patients that if we use a term they don't understand, they need to ask about that, to put the burden on the provider to be clear.
Exactly right. Yep. Thank you, Kat. The medical terminology is so ingrained in us, it's hard for us to think about plain language. So, and I appreciate that comment. And Lisa's like nodding her head, oh, yeah, that's right, I did use vital. So, exactly. Here's another way, going back to resources, here's another resource that is have so many valuable resources, and it's always use TeachBack. They, too, have an online interactive TeachBack module. Theirs is more hospital-based, but it still has some really good resources. As you saw, we used one of those today about the 10 essential elements of TeachBack. They have coaching videos for nurses and physicians that are very good. It's something that you can incorporate into your training. TeachBack implementation guide. In fact, I'm talking about training. I just thought of this now. I'd really like to know how people are providing or how the clinics are providing training in their clinic. If they put that into ChatCat, that would be great. How are you providing TeachBack training at your organization? The Always Use TeachBack also has an implementation guide. They have some phenomenal evaluation tools. The Confidence and Conviction Scale really helps with determining, number one, are they convinced, is your staff convinced that TeachBack is an effective method of communication and that it's important enough to incorporate into their practice? And then number one, how confident are they, or secondly, how confident are they in using it? And then look at the TeachBack observation tool. When you're doing your holding your TeachBack clinic, you can measure individual specific ability to provide TeachBack using those 10 essential elements. You have something that is definitely measurable. Some other resources are available is a TeachBack module that is on the Great Plains Quinn webpage. And this is more comprehensive. This is more like a 3 to 3.5 hour training. Excuse me again. But that's how we used to provide it, but now we're definitely becoming much more efficient. But there are still some good resources there, like the TeachBack planning guide. There's also a PowerPoint presentation there that you can pick and choose the slides and do whatever you want to. There's agendas, there's evaluation forms, and a number of other resources there. One of the points that I like to make when I'm talking to organizations is really think about how are you going to evaluate the implementation of TeachBack and the utilization of that, because it's really important. In order to get the time and the resources to do it, we need to justify why it is that we're doing it. So thinking about how can you evaluate it, looking at the number of phone calls for clarification pre and post implementation of TeachBack, looking at your missed appointments, those no-shows, not every missed appointment is related to the fact that they didn't understand that they were supposed to come back, but it could, but it can also be an element. What are the patient outcomes of some of your chronic disease patients? Looking at your A1Cs, the blood pressures, the immunizations, the medication regimen adherence. Have they gone from making mistakes with their Coumadin dose, or are they now becoming, they've now come to the place that they understand when to take those their medications and in what dose? And looking at utilization of acute care. How many ED visits or observation stays maybe are avoided because people are now understanding their treatment plan and their medication regimen? How satisfied are patients with the communication that's being provided by your staff and your providers? We have a hospital that's been working now for about 2 years, going on 2 years now, and they have like 90% of their professional staff who provide patient education who are now educated with TeachBack. And now they're beginning to see in their HCAP scores, in the communication measures, they are seeing a significant improvement in those scores. And they attribute it to directly back to TeachBack because that's when they're seeing the improvement. So there are benefits to that. And also when I think about TeachBack, it's really about patient engagement for those clinics that are working on some of those patient-centered medical home and some of those other initiatives that are out there. TeachBack and incorporating that in your clinic helps you move towards the patient engagement goals. Staff satisfaction. You know, what I'm hearing out in the field and in person, my own personal experience, is that TeachBack sells itself because patients are getting that positive feedback from their patients about how great this is and how wonderful, and I understood that, and it just feeds more utilization and greater effective use of TeachBack. It really brings back joy in their work because of the fact they're getting this positive feedback from patients. Then, of course, of how just the documentation of it. How is it documented in your EHR? Okay. The takeaway about TeachBack is we are spending so much time, and rightfully so, on making sure that the medication list that we have in the medical record for our patients is accurate and correct. And so we spend a lot of time on medication reconciliation. I want you to think about TeachBack as really a way of reconciling information, all the information that our patients receive. Is the information I'm providing the information that they're receiving? So, Kat, are there any comments, questions in chat?
We did get one comment on using TeachBack with staff. Roger says they use patient education work groups, and TeachBack is one of the tools they use, along with those stoplight tools you were talking about earlier.
Well, Roger gets, an A+. He's using stoplight tools, and they're using TeachBack. Great. That's awesome. That's great to hear. Okay, again, this is just a slide talking about the CEUs for nurses. And when you log out of the webinar, you will be redirected to, and you'll receive an email, and they'll redirect you to the evaluation form, which has to be completed. Now, if you are sitting with a number of people or one or two other individuals, share that email with those that attended the webinar, so that they can complete the evaluation. Okay, next slide. An upcoming event. We're going to have a follow-up call to this. It's basically, it'll be a phone call, a little WebEx briefly, talking and reviewing implementation. And so I would love to have some of you that have to join that call that have had experience of actually implementing it in the clinic and what some of the lessons learned you've had. And then, obviously, those of you that have questions, you know what? We're going to use this as an opportunity to address those questions and get your questions answered. And like you can see, it's only 30 minutes. So there'll be more information coming out about that after this call. Jennifer, at the beginning, talked about joining our Learning in Action Network. You can see the contact here. It's on the Great Plains Clin website. And then the last slide is my contact information. If you have a question or concern about a resource or where training is or anything along the lines of regarding TeachBack, don't hesitate to contact me. And are there any remaining questions in chat?
Nothing else in chat. Thank you, Sally.
Okay. Well, I just want to thank each one of you for joining our webinar today. And investing 60 minutes of your time, maybe a couple minutes less, of learning about TeachBack. And I just want to thank those of you that are using TeachBack. Kudos to you, and just go forth doing that. And for all of you, thank you for the care that you provide to the patients that you serve. And thank you, and have a great day.